The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome to The Big Show. Glad you are with us on this Tuesday afternoon. It's a very busy news afternoon as the crime that has been created by our prosecutors and our judges is continuing to just wreak havoc throughout our region. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Also, we will talk to you exclusively about how our public schools are at times absolutely destroying our children. I'll leave that in just a moment. But let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
I have an interview coming up in the next half hour that you are not going to want to miss. Last week, I shared with you a Facebook post from a woman in our area, a local woman. Her name is Angie. Angie is a wife. She has three kids, and she has terminal cancer. She has a brain tumor the size of a lime. The cancer has metastasized, and the doctors have told her they don't know how long she's going to have to live. Could be months, could be a year, could be a little more than that. Her surgeons want to go in and operate on her brain tumor for a couple of reasons. Angie just has crippling headaches, and sometimes her husband can't help as she's curled up on the floor in a fetal position with ice bags wrapped all around her head and face and neck. Her doctor wants to go in and alleviate her pain. He can't because of Governor Jay Inslee. Jay Inslee's mandate that bans surgeries that are not life-threatening immediately are banned right now in Washington. If she has the surgery, Angie, according to her surgeon, she tells us that her surgeon says that she would have, you know, maybe several more months, maybe an extra year or two to be with her husband and kids. But Jay Inslee has put a ban on elective surgeries and a brain surgeon reducing the size of a tumor because it is already, she's going to die from this, whether she has the surgery or not. But there's a matter of extending her life for several months or for a couple of years. I read you her Facebook post last week. Coming up in the next half hour, we are going to talk with Angie, and you're going to hear her story from her. And we're going to make sure that Jay Inslee hears her story, because this elective surgery ban is absolutely devastating when you hear how it affects this one person, this one family. So we will have our conversation with Angie. She will join me coming up in the next half hour of the Dory Monson Show. Next up in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
I am certain of a few things in life. Life's riddled with uncertainty. But one thing that I'm certain of from being a dad, from being a coach, is if you tell kids that they're going to fail, I think it was Vince Lombardi. I don't know who originally we can attribute this quote to. If you think you can succeed, or if you think you can't succeed, you will be right. In other words, if you tell kids they can do anything they want, then they can achieve anything that they want. If you tell kids that they have no chance because of things beyond their control, they will be victims and they will be captive to that mentality for the rest of their lives. Of that, I am certain. And so what I think some of our public schools are doing to our kids is absolutely reprehensible. A listener just brought this one to my attention today. It was the Martin Luther King video presentation in the Kent School District. And they have taught these kids that they are victims, that they don't really have a chance unless you and I apologize for something. And to tell kids that they can get apologies for every slight they perceive, real or imagined, is also doing kids a disservice. But let me give you an example. As they had a montage of kids in this video presentation in the Kemp School District, and men, you want to hear a bunch of victims? Here you go.
But sometimes I can't help but feel like I need an apology too. For everything that was taken away, opportunities lost, promises unfulfilled, and deferred dreams, deferred again and again. I want an apology for the consequences of decisions made without my permission. An apology for the people who have been taken away from me. My heart aches for an apology that I will never hear. My heart aches for an apology that I will never hear.
Okay, if you're never going to hear this apology, and I don't know how that's going to change your life. If somebody comes up and says, I'm sorry, how does that change your life? It doesn't. It doesn't. But if you go through life as a victim, and I'm not accusing any of these individual kids, I think they've been inculcated with a poison that the schools and these programs that we're putting into the schools is planting in our kids' heads. Because, man, I tell you what, they all want you and me to apologize for something.
I want an apology. I want an apology from my dad for making me black. I want an apology from my dad for making me black, but marrying a white woman, so I'm not quite black. I want an apology from my dad for making me black, but not quite black, but teaching me about black culture, but not enough for me to be black. I want an apology from my mom. I want an apology from my mom for making me white. I want an apology from my mom for making me white, but marrying a black man, so I'm not quite white.
Okay, and so again, so somebody says, I'm sorry. Does that change your life? No. Does being a victim change your life? Yes, it is an anchor that'll drag you down for the rest of your life if you are going through life as a victim.
I want an apology from my mom for making me white. But not quite white, but giving me education and good housing and vocabulary, but not enough for me to be white. I want an apology from the world. I want an apology from the world for making me mixed, but not quite mixed. Because according to the world, my skin color means I'm black. I'm gangsters and Jordans and rough neighborhoods. But because of my voice, I'm white. I'm a college degree and a doctor or a lawyer. I want an apology, but still, I apologize.
Okay. And this seems to be the theme of so much of this program in the Kent schools.
I want an apology, but still, I apologize. I apologize for acting white around my black friends and family. I apologize for acting black around my white friends and family. I apologize.
Why do you apologize? If you don't want to act black around your white family, black around your white family, if you don't want to do that, just don't do it. If you want to do it, don't apologize for it. Either way, asking for an apology. Here's another girl, though. Guess what she wants?
My heart is searching for an apology. For more than a year of isolation. More than a year of feeling like I need to shout and march to be heard and seen. More than a year of lives lost in preventable ways.
And then finally, this kid at least knows the futility of what they're doing.
Hearts ache for the apology that I will never hear. We all deserve an apology. But I may never get the apology I deserve from those I need it from. But do know what I need to hear. If I speak them to myself, will it help me to forgive?
No. No, because you've had too many adults who've poisoned you to this victim mentality. And I can speak with some authority on this, not only as a dad and as a coach on how poisonous this whole mentality is, but I'll speak as a kid. I mean, nobody apologized to me for not having a dad around or when he was. I thought about this morning. The few times my dad was around, I was 12 years old, and he came drunk to one of my Little League games, and he had peed himself. He was wearing these kind of light-colored blue jeans. And there's a big wet pee stain all around the crotch of his pants. You know what it's like to be 12 years old and hey, is that your dad? Because nobody knew him. Is that your dad? You know what that's like? Do you think anybody apologized to me for that? Nah. When the phone got cut off, when the electricity got cut off, they gave me apologize? No. But I'm glad nobody did, because I didn't feel like a victim. I felt through, the grace of God and, however I was able to form my worldview at a very early age, I felt like I had unlimited possibility in life, even though there were some things that were every bit as challenging as what I'm sure these kids in the video are talking about. But I wasn't a victim. And I didn't ask for apologies. And I didn't need apologies so I could move on in life. Instead, I recognized sometimes life deals you kind of a bad hand. And it's how you play that hand is determining, not what somebody else does for you, not the apologies. If somebody goes up to any of these kids and says, "I'm sorry," you think that's going to change their life? No. Only thing that's going to change their life is when they can get away from the poisonous adults and the poison in the schools that says you're a victim. And everybody owes you an apology. Now, we all have our own trials and tribulations. And if you see somebody who you think is in much better shape than you are in life, they probably have their own trials and tribulations that you know nothing about. So stop with this victim mentality. Stop with the everybody owes me an apology. Nobody owes you anything. You owe yourself to make the most out of your life. And the way you do that is by understanding that as long as you outwork your competition and you make good choices, you have dramatically increased your chances of succeeding in life. But if you walk around as victims and demanding apologies for everything, you've almost guaranteed failure in life. Despite what your teachers and administration are telling you with all this poison they're putting into the schools, they are lying to you, they are destroying you, and I am telling you the truth. You take care of your own life, you make your own opportunities with hard work and great choices, and then you have a chance to succeed. And of that, I am certain. Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I told you so.
An incident that happened at a West Seattle Target store is getting national attention now. This is when a man went into the Target store who had an incredibly long criminal history. He's 31 years old. He went into the Target store a few days ago. I played you a little bit of this audio, but we had a glitch yesterday. So I want to play you a little bit more. He went in, homeless man who's got a long, long criminal history. He grabbed a knife in the kitchenware section of the Target store in West Seattle. And then he started live tweeting. He said he was going to take hostages in the store.
Well, this court case isn't going to be fun. And no, I'm not representing myself. Yeah, I cannot represent myself for shit. I got super lucky that the prosecutor's office just did bullshit charges on me on that one. See, my face is all messed up because I don't have money for shit, man. So yeah, this will be fun.
But you can tell from his vocabulary, the way he talks, the way the words flow. This isn't a stupid guy. This is just this is a really sick guy.
This is a very unique bear cage situation that I've created. So what happened is I didn't have access to guns because of being a felon, not having money and connections to buy out the street, would not be able to assemble a ghost gun if had the money to purchase the components and the 3D printer and whatever. So this is so we have. In the criminal element, there's nobody even that comes even close to the understanding the tactical and negotiation and having worked for a law enforcement agency.
So at least 10 times in this guy's history, he had committed crimes that apparently were intended to have cops shoot and kill him. He wants to commit suicide by cop. They keep releasing him onto the streets. And apparently they're going to continue releasing him until he does kill somebody. At the King County Prosecutor's Office, Casey McNerthney says they're trying to keep this guy locked up, but the judges just keep letting him walk free.
We've argued consistently every time that he's a danger to the community. And I think what we saw on Friday shows that. We've argued two things, that he's a danger to the community and needs to be held on bail because of that. And also that this is somebody who needs help.
So he needs mental help. But instead, judges just are waiting for him to kill somebody. Like in New York City, when a deranged homeless man shoved a woman in front of a subway train last week. Like in Los Angeles, when a deranged homeless man stabbed a 24-year-old young woman to death in the store where she was working. And in Seattle, we keep releasing these guys. Seattle and King County and the entire Puget Sound area. We keep releasing these guys until they kill somebody. This is on the prosecutor's office for having legalized drugs, and it is on the judges who believe in flooding our streets with criminals because the judges are Marxists themselves, and they think that flooding us with criminals will lead to Marxist change. And they should all be condemned for that. I'm working on getting the names of the judges who keep releasing this guy. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Coming up next, I will reshare the Facebook post with a woman with terminal cancer whose doctors cannot perform brain tumor surgery because Jay Inslee says it's elective. I'll read your Facebook post and then she will join me. Coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. Last week, I shared with you a Facebook post by a Western Washington woman that touched a lot of your hearts and infuriated a lot of you. And I understand that range of emotion. I'm going to talk with this woman in just a few minutes here on the Dory Monson Show. If you weren't listening last week, here's what she wrote on Facebook. Her name's Angie. I don't post a lot. I've been keeping a lot of personal stuff private, mostly my battle with brain and now other cancers. And I've been staying away from politics until now. Some of you lucky ones have witnessed drastic changes in me lately. The loss of my hair, extreme weight loss, memory loss, and how exhausted and drained I am. How I'm so damn tired of hiding this tremendous pain and fear behind some stupid smile, acting like it'll all be okay, and that the doctors are wrong about this past Christmas being my last Christmas. How I literally break down and bawl my eyes out night after night in the shower, or how I've planned my funeral and written letters I thought I had years to prepare for. You haven't seen the pain and agony in my husband's eyes as he lays beside me when the pain in my head is too much to bear, and I'm crumpled on the ground with ice packs covering every inch of my head, neck, and face, waiting for the extraordinary burn I feel to subside. The sadness on my children's faces as they stand there helpless, not knowing how to say goodbye. The loss my mother feels, preparing to let go of another child, or the uncontrollable vomiting from the painful ovarian tumor that is so large you can see it bulging out of my abdomen. Many of you have asked why I haven't had surgery yet to remove or debulk my brain tumor, or to take out the ovarian tumor, and now colon cancer, and finding out today via another MRI, I have multiple bone lesions that could be malignant as well. Let me tell you why. We have a governor with a God complex that issued our hospitals, our talented surgeons and experts, that unless it's a medical emergency, as in you will die within 24 hours, that anything else is considered an elective procedure. Elective? Let me make that easier to understand. My lime-sized brain tumor that has caused blindness in my right eye, that has robbed me of my memory, my balance, and has caused physical, noticeable changes, that is messing with my hormones, is an elective surgery? How due to those high-low hormonal changes actually caused the yam-sized tumor in my ovary, which spread to my colon? Elective because it doesn't look like I'll die in the next day or two. So my surgeries via Inslee need to be presented before a surgical board, and from there I may or may not be offered the surgery. I desperately need to try to outlive the timeline I've been given. I'm supposed to sit here gracefully while the big man, Jay Inslee, gets to sit behind his desk calling me a Washingtonian and dictates whether I get to live or die. Good job voting that bleep poll in again. That vote, quite literally, is costing me my life. Who does he think he is? Over our medical professional staff who are ordering these procedures because life does depend on them. My quality of life depends on them. I've had specialists tell me this, blinking back tears, holding my hand, and telling me how sorry and how frustrating this is for them as well. This is really happening, people. This is happening to me and others, and before any one of you come to defend your brilliant, compassionate governor, imagine you are in my shoes or sitting where my family is and save it. Like, seriously, scroll on by. I've seen firsthand who this man is, and I'm beyond pissed and disgusted. I'm not ready to die. Give me a fighting chance. God save me. Once again, thank you for those who have rallied around me, lifting me up and being such a comfort in my time of need. Your kindness and support carries me through. I feel your love daily. And that's from Angie. Well, that impacted so many of you when I shared it last week. We have reached out and connected with Angie. Let me take a real quick time out here, and then Angie will join me, and you will hear her story from her next. You're on the Dory Monson Show. We just heard the Facebook post from a local woman named Angie. Terminal cancer and the surgery that her surgeons want to do are on hold right now because of Jay Inslee's elective surgery ban. It's leading to some physical changes and incredible pain. Let me welcome to the show the woman who wrote that Facebook post, Angie. Angie, thank you for coming on with me this afternoon and for shedding light on what I think is a really important issue.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Okay. In case people weren't listening as I read your Facebook post last week, would you just share, you know, to whatever extent you're comfortable, what your medical situation is, what it is that you are battling right now?
Sure. So I am battling a fairly large brain tumor. It's roughly about the size of a lime, and it is causing a lot of pressure on my pituitary, which is then causing me to mass produce or not produce enough of certain hormones, which then is also causing additional health concerns. And on top of that, because of one of the hormones that it's excreting a lot of, I have formed ovarian tumors, and we're just kind of, every time I go in, I feel like they find something new, something else that I'm having to battle in regards to everything that's going on.
Yeah. So it has metastasized to some extent.
Yes.
Okay. And pardon me, I mean, I feel uncomfortable asking this, but I want to convey, when we get into the reason why you wanted to shed light on this issue, is this considered terminal, what you have?
Yes.
Okay. And do you know how long you have, Angie?
If left untreated, I could be looking at months to just a few years, just depending on how quickly things grow and progress and spread.
And I know your husband Brian is there with you right now. Do you guys have kids?
We do. We have three.
How old are they?
They are 24, 23, and almost 20.
Okay. And so, I mean, if they could come in and and do a procedure on the Lyme-sized brain tumor if they could try to surgically go after some of these other cancers that are spreading. It would very likely, and I assume your doctors have told you that while it will not save your life, it could extend your life. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So here's the story that we got into last week, and it is that your doctors can't go in right now. Tell everybody why that is.
Because there is a mandate on that is deeming my situation, my tumors, as elective procedures, because it's not looking like my death will occur in the next couple of weeks.
And so they are only allowed to go in if it's imminent. And what you said in your Facebook post, Angie, is we have a governor with a God complex that issued our hospitals, our talented surgeons and experts, unless it's a medical emergency, as in you will die within 24 hours, that anything else is considered an elective procedure. And as you made clear, it doesn't seem elective to you. You talked about you're blind in one eye, you've blinding headaches, that you have all of these other complications that come with what is happening. I cannot imagine the pain, the frustration, and the anger that would come with you and your surgeons being told that this is elective.
Yeah, correct. When I was hearing elective procedures, you know, my mind went to cosmetic procedures like, you know, breast augmentations and things like that. I would have never thought that my doctors, you know, my neurosurgeons and doctors that are treating tumors inside of my body, as that being an elective procedure. Because for me, it's not elective. It's a necessity. Without these surgeries, I am going to continue to decline. And
right.
my life should mean something more than being brought in front of a surgical board to vote on how severe they think I am and whether or not I can get in, you know, a just fair time to help ease these symptoms and, you know, hopefully, you know, maybe get in front of and treat the causes of, that these tumors are creating for me. It's not an elective procedure. It needs to happen.
And if it will extend your life and give you years, months, weeks with your husband, with your three kids, that's, I find it incredulous that that is considered elective. And what you said in that Facebook post is that vote quite literally is costing me my life. And then talking about Jay Inslee, who does he think he is over our professional medical staff who are ordering these procedures because life does depend on them. My quality of life depends on them. And that was so well said on your part. Have you or your surgeons tried reaching out to the governor's office? Because Nicole and I, we are going to send this interview to the governor's office. But have you tried in any way to reach out to him or the, you know, the medical people who are advising him?
No, I haven't. And I think that's where my frustration broke. I'm not on Facebook a lot, nor am I disclosing a lot of personal information. But when I came home from that appointment, finding out that I'm considered elective, I was devastated. And I just kept thinking, this isn't right. It's not fair. It's how frustrating and sad even my doctors were telling and sharing this news to me. And I know it's not these doctors. I know their hands are tied.
Yes.
But
yeah.
It makes no sense to me. These doctors are, they're very talented. They're educated. They're not going to be telling people that they need surgeries when they don't need it. Obviously, if they're saying we got to get in, we got to take care of this, otherwise you're going to continue to decline, that it's a necessity. And then we have a governor that then is saying, well, hold on a minute. It's not when it is. And Inslee, as far as I know, doesn't have a medical background. So how is he able to dictate that?
Well, he very famously, a few months ago, in a press conference, he said, the only one who can save lives is me. And then in his most recent press conference last week, he said that he has saved 17,000 lives with the mandates that he's put forward in our state. And as I hear your story, Angie, I think that no matter what Jay Inslee's trying to brag about that he's done and that he's accomplished, it's more than counterbalanced by your story and what he's doing to you and people in similar situations to you. And I'm almost speechless here, Angie, because this is so infuriating to me, and you are so personally affected by it. I really can't imagine what you must be going through.
Yeah, and I had heard that too. And yeah, he might be thinking he's saving lives by the mandates and the first vaccines and all this stuff, but he's costing people their lives as well. And on the flip side of that, I think that cancer procedures, medical tumor, a lot of different procedures take precedence over a vaccine. It's just, you know, we have these good doctors, these great doctors that are educated, that have done their research. And on top of that, you know, they're losing their jobs or having to walk away from their jobs because they're not, you know, honoring the mandate for whatever reason, which then is causing, you know, the crowding in our hospitals when these doctors know the risks and the facts of all that, but yet they still choose, they want to go to work every single day to save these people's lives. And they literally can't. And so that's what put us in this situation, which is then in return, Inslee is causing deaths among us because of him deeming necessary surgeries as elective.
And have the surgeons said that with these procedures, how much time they might be able to extend your life to be with your loved ones? Have they estimated that at all?
They really haven't estimated that, but I know because, you know, when you're early in a diagnosis, your prognosis is way better than waiting until it grows and it spreads. And unfortunately, that's what I'm feeling like I'm faced with right now, is like in the beginning, I probably had way better odds than what I'm quite possibly looking at now, along with having to wait so long. I've undergone permanent physical changes that are going to be with me forever, for the rest of my life, that could have been prevented if taken care of in the beginning.
Okay, I guarantee you 100% Jay Inslee is going to hear about this interview, and I would imagine his staffers are going to have him listen to this interview. Forget about me. If you have a moment right here as we wrap things up to directly address Governor Inslee, what do you want to say to him?
I want him to know that his mandates, his direct mandates, are causing more harm than he is realizing, that there's many of us out here that are struggling. We're struggling every single day to get out of bed. We're struggling with the thoughts of everything that's going to be happening in our lives. As I said in my post, I've planned my funeral, and that's a very scary and dark place to be. And if he could just for one moment sit back and think if there's somebody in his family, his wife, loved ones that are having to deal with the repercussions of this mandate, that his eyes, that, you know, Inslee's eyes would be open to this and understand that, no, he's just simply wrong. He's simply wrong. And I want my life preserved. I want to be able to be here in 20 years. I don't want to have to see the looks on my family's faces anymore when I am literally unable to function. And these mandates need to be lifted in order to save so many other people's lives. And I really, really hope that can hit home for him.
We will absolutely make sure that this conversation gets to Governor Inslee's office. And I hope your story will inspire change that maybe will bring a little bit of comfort and relief to other people in similar situations. Angie, I think it's really courageous of you to be speaking out about this. And ever since I saw your Facebook post, you and your family have been in my prayers, and God bless you as you continue through this journey.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot.
Okay. All my best to you, Angie. Take care, and thank you for coming on with me today.
Thank you. You as well.
That is Angie, a Western Washington woman who's cancer surgery that could extend her life by months, a year, to be with her husband and her kids. It's elective, according to Jay Inslee. I talked to a surgeon last week about this, and he said we were managing just fine in the medical community. We know how to prioritize. We know when to say no to something that's truly elective. Governor Inslee, are you listening? Because this is madness. This is absolute sheer madness. And thank you to Angie again for being so courageous to share her story with the governor and with you. We'll check the news for you here at the top of the hour. Then the Fast 15 is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.